I sometimes have sick fancies, and I have one now to see some play. There. There. Play. 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 Are you sullen and obstinate?
No, ma'am. But I'm sorry, I can't play just now. If you complain of me, I shall get into trouble with my sister, so I would do it if I could. But it's so new here and fine and sad.
So new to him and old to me. Call Estella. You can do that at least. Call her. At the door.
Estella. Estella. Estella.
Then at last Estella answered, and her light came along the dark passage like a star. Miss Havisham tried a jewel against her hair.
Your own one day, my dear, and you will use it well. Let me see you play cards with this boy.
He's common.
Well, you can break his heart.
What do you play, boy?
Only beggar my neighbour, miss.
Beggar him.
During the games, she sat corpse-like.
Two jacks.
He calls the knaves jacks, this boy. And he's got coarse hands and thick boots.
I had never thought of being ashamed of my hands before. I dealt, and as was only natural when I knew she was lying in wait for me to do wrong, misdealt.
Stupid.
She says many hard things of you, but you say nothing of her. What do you think of her? Tell me in my ear.
I think she is very proud.
And?
I think she is very pretty.
Yes?
She is very insulting. I want to go home.
You shall soon. Play the game out.
I played the game to an end with Estella, and she beggared me.
When shall I have you here again?
Today's Wednesday.
I know nothing of days of the week. Come again after 6 days. You hear?
Yes, ma'am.
Estella, take him down. Let him have something to eat and let him roam and look about him while he eats. Go, Pip.
In bright daylight, I looked at my clumsy hands. Why had Joe never taught me jacks should be called knaves?
Here's bread and meat. You're crying.
I'm not.
But when she'd gone, I leaned my sleeve against the wall and cried, and knocked the wall, twisting my hair. I was so humiliated. In a child's world, there is nothing so finely perceived, finely felt, as injustice. I had known from the time when I could first speak that my sister, in her capricious and violent government, was unjust to me, as was this girl now. Now continually walking away from me as I wandered in the overgrown garden and ate food thrown at me like a dog in disgrace.
Why don't you cry?
I don't want to.
You do? You've been crying till you're half blind and you're near crying again now.
For the last time, what is she like?
Despite having my face ignominiously shoved against the kitchen wall for not answering Mrs. Joe's questions fast enough, I felt convinced that if I described Miss Havisham as my eyes had seen her, she would not be understood, and that there was something coarse and treacherous in my dragging her as she really was, to say nothing of Estella, before the contemplation of my sister.
Oh, Uncle Pumblechook!
Boy, what like is Miss Havisham?
Very tall and dark.
Is she, Uncle?
Indeed, good.
Oh, I wish you had him, Uncle, always. You know so well how to deal with him.
Now, boy, what was she doing of when you went in today?
Sitting in a black velvet coach. And Miss Estella, that's her niece, I think, handed her in cake and wine on a gold plate.
Was there? Was anyone else there?
Four dogs.
Large or small?
Huge. and they were fighting for veal cutlets out of a silver basket.
Where was this coach, in the name of gracious?
In Miss Havisham's room, but there weren't any horses to it.
Can this be possible, Uncle?
I tell you, Mum, my opinion is it's a sedan chair. She's flighty, you know, quite flighty enough to pass her days in a sedan chair.
Did you ever see her in it, Uncle?
I've never clapped eyes on her. How could I? When I've been there, I've been took up the outside of a door, and she spoke to me that way. What did you play at, boy?
With flags.
Flags?
Estella waved a blue one, I had a red one, and Miss Havisham had one sprinkled all over with little gold stars. And then we all waved our swords and shouted.
Well, where did you get the swords from?
Out of a cupboard. And I saw pistols in it and jam and pills, and it was all lighted up with candles.
That's true, Mum. That is the state of the case. For that much I've seen myself.
So occupied were they with my marvels that they saved me from mentioning the balloon in the yard and the bear in the brewery. And Joe coming in had to be told in detail everything by my sister.
And they ate their meat off gold plates. She must do something for him. I think property will be left.
No, Mum. Perhaps a handsome premium, binding him apprentice to some genteel trade. Say the corn and seed trade. Hey, sixpence?
I'd say be lucky if Miss Havisham's give him one of those dogs which had fought for the veal cutlets.
If a fool's head can't express better opinions than that, and you've got any work to do, you had better go and do it.
Goes out.
Uncle Bumblechook gone?
Yes.
What is it, Pip?
You know all that about Miss Havisham.
Remember, I
thought... It ain't true, Joe. It's lies, Joe.
Not all of it. If there weren't no wheel cutlets, at least there was dogs.
No, Joe.
A puppy? What possessed you, Pip, old chap?
There was a beautiful girl... And she was proud, and she said I was common, and I wish you hadn't taught me to call these at cards Jacks, Joe, and I wish my boots weren't so thick nor my hands. I don't know how the lies come.
Lies is lies, Pip. That ain't the way to get out of being common, old chap. And as to being common, I don't make that out at all clear. You're uncommon small, yes, but likewise, you're an uncommon scholar.
I'm backward, Joe.
Why, see what a letter you wrote.
You think too much of me, Joe.
Be it so or be it so, you must be a common scholar before you can be an uncommon one, I should hope. The king upon his throne with the crown upon his head can't sit and write out the Acts of Parliament in print without having begun, when he was an unpromoted prince, with the alphabet, could he?
No, Joe.
Were there a flag, perhaps?
No, Joe.
Well, that's a thing that can't be looked into without putting your sister on the rampage. Look here, Pip, as what is said to you by a true friend. If you can't get to be uncommon through going straight, you'll never get to do it with lies.
You angry with me, Joe?
No, old chap. But bearing in mind that them lies, which I mean to say, were of a stunning and audacious sort, alluding to them which bordered on wheel cutlass and dog-fighting, a sincere well-wisher would advise, Pip, them being dropped into your meditation when you go upstairs to bed. That's all, old chap. Don't never do it no more.
There was a public house in the village, and I had strict instructions from my sister that after I'd been to Mrs. Wopsle's evening school and my long fight with Biddy and the alphabet was over, I should bring Joe home at my peril.
Hello, Pip, old chap!
There was a stranger sitting with Joe and Mr. Wopsle, a secret-looking man. His head was all on one side, one of his eyes half shut up, as if he were taking aim at someone with an invisible gun. As I sat, he nodded to me, then rubbed his leg in a very odd way.
You were saying you was a blacksmith?
Yes, I said it.
He didn't mention your name, by the by.
Joe Gargery.
What'll you drink, Mr. Gargery?
Well, to tell you the truth, I ain't much in the habit of drinking at anybody's expense but my own.
But once in a way, and on a Friday night too, can't put a name to it, Mr. Gargery.
Rum.
Three rums, landlord.
This other gentleman, Mr. Wopsle, is a gentleman you'd like to hear give it out. He He's our clerk at church.
Ah, the lonely church. Right out in the marshes, with graves round it.
That's it.
I'm not acquainted with this country, gentlemen, but it seems solitary towards the river.
Most marshes is solitary.
No doubt, no doubt. Any vagabonds, vagrants of any sort out there?
No, none but a runaway convict now and then. And we don't find them easy, eh, Mr. Wopsle?
Seems you've been out after such.
Once. Not that we wanted to take them, you understand. We went out as lookers-on, me and Mr. Wopsle here, and Pip also here. Didn't us, Pip?
Yes, Joe.
He's a likely young parcel of bones, that. What is it you call him?
Pip.
All this while, the strange man looked only at me, and as if he were determined to have a shot at me at last and bring me down. But he said nothing until...
Three rums and water, gentlemen?
Then he made his shot. He stirred his rum and water pointedly at me. And he tasted his rum and water pointedly at me. And he stirred it, not with a spoon, but with a file. And when he had done, he wiped it and put it in his breast pocket. I knew it was Joe's file, and I knew that he knew my convict. I sat gazing at him, spellbound. But he now took no further notice of me and talked about turnips for half an hour until it was time to go.
Stop off a moment, Mr. Gargery. I think I've got a bright new shilling somewhere in my pocket. And if I have, the boy shall have it.
He looked it out from a handful of small change, folded it in some crumpled paper.
Yours. Mine. Your own.
Thank you.
Good night, sir.
Good night, blacksmith. And you, Mr. Wipsle.
And he gave me only a look with his aiming eye. No, not a look, for he shut it up. But wonders may be done with an eye by hiding it. Joe went all the way home with his mouth wide open to rinse the rum out with as much air as possible. But I was in a manner stupefied by this turning up of my old misdeed and old acquaintance, and I could think of nothing else.
A bad un, I'll be bound, or he wouldn't have given it to the boy. Let's look at it. But, what's this? It's wrapped in 2 1-pound notes. Take them back!
Joe caught up his hat again and ran to the Jolly Bargeman. But the stranger had left. And all Joe could do was to leave word concerning the mistake. And my sister sealed the notes in a piece of paper and hid them under some dried rose leaves in an ornamental teapot in the state parlour. There they remained, a nightmare to me, many and many a night and day. I couldn't sleep when I got to bed, through thinking of the strange man taking aim at me with his invisible gun, and of the guilty, coarse and common thing it was to be on secret terms of conspiracy with convicts. I was haunted by the file. A dread possessed me that when I least expected it, it would reappear. I coaxed myself to sleep by thinking of Miss Havisham's next Wednesday. But then, in my sleep, I saw the file coming at me out of a door without seeing who held it.
Come this way today.
I was led by the single candle through the basement length of the house to a small yard and then into a detached house that looked as if it had once belonged to the manager or head clerk of the old brewery. There was a clock on the outer wall. Like Miss Havisham's watch, it had stopped at 9:20.
Cousin Raymond, we are to love our neighbours.
Sarah Pocket, if a man is not his own neighbour, who is?
The idea!
Boy, you are to stand here till you are wanted.
There were two ladies in the room and one gentleman. Something told me immediately they were all toadies and humbugs.
Poor sure so. He is so very strange. Would anyone believe that when Tom's wife died, he actually could not be induced to see the importance of the children's having the deepest of trimmings to their mourning? Good Lord, says he, Camilla, what can it signify, so long as the poor bereaved little things are in black?
Heaven forbid I should deny any good points in him, but Matthew never had, and he never will have, any sense of the proprieties.
I was obliged to be firm. I said, Matthew, it will not do. Without deep trimmings, the family is disgraced. Then he flung out in his violent way, then do as you like. Thank goodness it will always be a consolation to me to know that I instantly went out in the pouring rain and bought the things.
Matthew paid for them, though, didn't he? Now, boy, you are to come with me.
Well, what next? Was there ever such a fancy? The idea!
Well,
what, miss?
Am I pretty?
Yes, I think you're very pretty.
Insulting?
Not so much as you were last time.
Not so much?
No.
Now, you little coarse monster, what do you think of me now?
I shan't tell you.
Because you're going to tell upstairs, is that it?
No.
Why don't you cry again, you little wretch?
Because I'll never cry for you again.
You know where she is, so go there.
Come in. So, the days have worn away, have they?
Yes, ma'am. Today's...
I don't want to know. Are you ready to play?
I don't think I am, ma'am.
Since this house strikes you old and sad, boy, and you are unwilling to play, are you willing to work?
Yes.
Then go into that room opposite. And wait there till I come.
There, a long table was spread as if a feast had been in preparation when the house and the clocks all stopped together. A center ornament was heavily overhung with cobwebs where speckled-legged spiders and mice ran in and out. A fire had been lately lit in the damp, old-fashioned grate, and as it was more disposed to go out than burn up, the reluctant smoke hanging in the room, like our own marsh mist, seemed colder than the cleaner air.
This is where I will be laid when I am dead. They shall come and look at me here. What do you think that is, where those cobwebs are?
I don't know, ma'am.
A bride cake. Mine. Come. Come, come. Walk me. Walk me!
That was my work, to walk Miss Havisham round and round the room.
Slower.
We went at a fitful speed, and all the time she worked her mouth, and her hand twitched at my shoulder.
Call Estella.
Estella! Estella!
While we waited for her, we again took up our walk, round and round. And when Estella did appear, the toadies and humbugs were with her.
Miss Havisham!
Keep walking, Pip.
Dear Miss Havisham, how well you look.
I do not. I am yellow skin and bone. So, how are you, Camilla?
Thank you, Miss Havisham. I am as well as can be expected. I do not wish to make a display of my feelings, but I have habitually thought of you more in the night than I'm quite equal to.
Then don't think of me.
Very easily said.
Raymond is a witness what ginger and sal volatile I am obliged to take in the night. Raymond is a witness what nervous jerkings I have in my legs.
Camilla, my dear, it is well known that your family feelings are gradually undermining you to the extent of making one of your legs shorter than the other.
I'm not aware that to think of any person is to make a great claim upon that person, my dear. Thinking is easy enough.
Oh, yes, yes, it's a weakness to be so affectionate, but I can't help it. No doubt my health would be much better.
Miss Havisham and I had never stopped all this time, but kept going round and round the airless room, now brushing against the skirts of the visitors, now giving them the whole length of the dismal chamber.
There's Matthew, never mixing with us natural ties, never coming here to see how Miss Havisham is. I have gone into a state hours and hours on account of Matthew's conduct, and nobody has thanked me.
The question to put to yourself is, who did you expect to thank you, my love?
Raymond is witness. Oh!
Matthew Pocket will come and see me at last when I am on this table. His place will be at my head. Yours will be there. And your husband's there. Sarah Pockets? Here. Now you all know where to take your stations when you come to feast on me. You can now go.
I suppose there is nothing to be done. It's something to have seen the object of one's love and duty.
Let them find their own way out, Estella.
Bless you, Miss Havisham, dear.
Walk me. Walk me, Pip.
Miss Havisham.
This is my birthday, Pip. I don't suffer it to be spoken of. Those who were here just now come here on the day, but they dare not refer to it. On this day of the year, long before you were born, this heap of decay was brought here. It and I have worn away together. The mice have gnawed at it, and sharper teeth have gnawed at me. When the ruin is complete, and when they lay me dead in my bride's dress, on the bride's table, which shall be done, and which will be the finished curse upon him, so much the better if it is done on this day. Let me see you two play cards. Why have you not begun?
And of course, as before, I was beggared, while Miss Havisham watched us or tried her jewels on Estella's breast and hair.
Look how beautiful she is, Pip.
Estella, for her part, treated me with her habitual disdain. And after a day was appointed for my return, I was taken down into the yard to be fed in the former dog-like manner and left to wander about on my own. Having exhausted the overgrown garden, at the greenhouse, I looked in at a broken window and found myself exchanging a broad stare with a pale young gentleman with red eyelids and light hair. He had been at his books, and he was inky.
Hello, young fellow.
Hello.
Who let you in?
Miss Estella.
Who gave you leave to prowl about?
Miss Estella.
Come and fight. Stop a minute, though. I ought to give you a reason.
He instantly slapped his hands, daintily flung one of his legs up behind him, pulled my hair, slapped his hands again, dipped his head and butted my stomach. So I hit him.
Oof! Laws of the game.
He was dancing from one foot to the other.
Regular rules. Come to the ground and go through the preliminaries. Follow.
In a retired nook of the garden, he produced a bottle of water and a sponge dipped in vinegar.
Available for both.
Although he didn't look very healthy, having pimples on his face and breaking out at his mouth, he stripped to his waist in a manner at once light-hearted, businesslike, and bloodthirsty. My heart failed me when I saw him squaring at me and eyeing my anatomy as if he were minutely choosing his bone. I have never been so surprised in my life as I was when I hit him again. There he was, looking up at me with a bloody nose and his face exceedingly foreshortened. But he sponged himself, squared up again, and my next blow left him on his back looking up at me out of a black eye. His spirit inspired me with great respect. He seemed to have no strength, and he never hit me hard. Every time he was knocked down, he got up again, dancing back to battle. He got heavily bruised, for, I am sorry to record, the more I hit him, the harder I hit him, and he came back again and again until at last he got a bad fall with the back of his head against the wall. He crawled round confusedly and threw his sponge up in the air.
Oh, that means you've won.
Can I help you?
No, thank you. I'm off.
Good afternoon.
Same to you.
And he was gone. When I got back to the courtyard, I found Estella waiting with the keys. There was a bright flush on her face, as though something had happened to delight her.
Come into this corner. You may kiss me if you like.
But I felt that the kiss was given to the coarse, common boy, as a piece of money might have been, worth nothing. Estella was always about and always let me in and out, but never told me I might kiss her again. As we began to be more used to one another, Miss Havisham talked more to me, while I walked her round her rooms or wheeled her sometimes when she grew tired of walking.
What are you going to be, Pip?
Apprentice to Joe, Mr. Gargering, ma'am.
As what?
Blacksmith. But I want to know everything.
Look at her, Pip. Does she grow prettier and prettier?
Yes.
Come here, Estella, my dear. Come here. Come. Break their hearts, my pride and hope. Break their hearts and have no mercy. Pip, sing that blacksmith song you're always humming. Sing. Sing!
You are to hammer boys round. Oak them with a thump and a sound. Oak them, beat it out, beat it out. Oak them with a cling for the stout. Oak them, blow the fire, blow the fire. Oak them, roaring drier, soaring higher. Oak them.
What could I become with such surroundings? How could my character fail to be influenced by them? Is it to be wondered at if my thoughts were dazed, as my eyes were when I came out into the natural light from those misty yellow rooms? Of all this, however, I told no one because of my previous lies, but Biddy. I told Biddy everything. Why it came natural to me to do so, and why Biddy had a deep concern in everything I told her, I did not know then, though I think I know now.
You are growing tall, Pip. Tell me the name again of that blacksmith of yours.
Joe Gargery, ma'am.
You'd better be apprenticed at once. Would Gargery come here with you and bring your indentures, do you think?
He'll be honoured, ma'am.
Then let him come. Let him come soon.
You're to come alone with me, Joe.
Oh. Alone? And what am I? Am I doormats under your feet? How dare you use me so? And how dare you say what company I am fit for?
She got out her dustpan, always a bad sign, put on her coarse apron and began cleaning up to such a terrible extent she cleaned Joe and me out of the house and we stood shivering in the backyard. It was 10 o'clock before we turned to creep in again.
Why didn't you marry a negress slave from the beginning?
You are the husband of the sister of this boy?
Never did Joe look so unlike himself. Throughout the interview, he persisted in addressing me instead of Miss Havisham.
What I mean to say, Pip, is I up and married your sister, yes.
And you have reared the boy with the intention of taking him for your apprentice. Is that so, Mr. Gargery?
Pip, if you'd ever made objections to the business, such as it being open to black or soot or such like, they would have been attended to, don't you see?
Has the boy ever made any objections? Does he like the trade?
which is well beknown to yourself, Pip, that it were the wish of your own heart.
Have you brought the indentures with you?
Here they are.
When I saw Estella's eyes laughing mischievously behind Miss Havisham's chair, I knew I was ashamed of the dear good fellow.
You expected no premium with the boy.
Joel, you answer.
Pip, you know the answer to be full well no. You know it to be no, Pip, and wherefore should I say it?
Pip has earned a premium here, and here it is. There are 5 and 20 guineas in this bag. Give it to your master, Pip.
Pip, this is very liberal on your part, Pip, and it is as such received and grateful welcome, though never looked for, far nor near, nor nowheres. And now, old chap, may we do our duty, both on us by another, and by them which your liberal present have conveyed to be for the satisfaction of mind of them as never, and from myself, far be it. Ah! What larks, Pip, what larks!
Goodbye, Pip. Let him out, Estella.
Am I to come again, Miss Harrison?
No. Gargery is your master now. Gargery, one word.
Pip?
The boy has been good here, and that is his reward. Of course, as an honest man, you will expect no other, and no more. Out!
Well, and what's happened to you? I wonder you can't ascend to come back to such poor society as this. I'm sure I do.
Miss Havisham made it very particular we should give Mrs. Gargery... Were it compliments or respects?
Compliments?
Much good they'll do me.
I'm wishing that the state of Miss Havisham's health were such as would... allowed, were it, Pip?
Of her having the pleasure...
Of ladies' company.
Well, she might have had the politeness to send that message at first, but it's better late than never. And what did she give to young Bonaparte here? Oh,
what she give, I mean... into the hands of Mrs. J. Gargery. She mayn't have known if it was Joe or George.
And how much have you got?
What would present company say to £20?
Oh, handsome would be the word.
Well then, it's more.
It's more than that, ma'am. Good again. Follow her up, Joseph.
It's 5 and 20 pounds.
Oh.
It's 5 and 20 pounds, ma'am, and it's no more than you merit. And I wish you joy of the money. Now, you see, Joseph and wife, I am one of them that always go right through with what they've begun. This boy must be bound out of hand. That's me way. Bound out of hand.
Oh, goodness knows, Uncle Pumblechook, we're deeply beholden to you.
The justices were sitting in the town hall, and in a corner my indentures were duly signed. At the Blue Boar, my sister and Mr. Pumblechook insisted we should all have dinner out of the windfall. And it was very late when I finally got to my little bedroom, truly wretched, and with a strong conviction in me that I should never like Joe's trade. I had liked it once, but once was not now. I am glad to know... I never breathed a murmur of doubt to Joe while my indentures lasted. It is about the only thing I am glad to know of myself in that connection. But for Joe's sake, I worked with tolerable zeal against the grain. But what I dreaded most was that at some unlucky moment I should lift up my eyes and see Estella looking in at one of the wooden windows of the forge and find me out with a black face and hands doing that coarsest part of my work and would exult over me and despise me. Every Sunday, out on the marshes, Joe and I would go to study. Joe for me, and I for Estella's sake. I never knew Joe to remember anything from one week to the next, but he would smoke with a wise and learned air, while I watched the vessels standing out to sea with their white sails spread, the light striking aslant afar off upon a cloud or green hillside.
Joe? Don't you think I ought to make Miss Havisham a visit?
Well, Pip, what for?
What's any visit made for?
Well, at some visits, perhaps as forever remains open to question, Pip. But in regard to Miss Havisham, she might think you wanted something.
Don't you think I might say that I don't, Joe?
You see, Pip, Miss Havisham done the handsome thing by you.
I know.
Which I mean to say, Pip, might be took. Make an end on it. As you was, meet the north, you to the south. Keep us sunders.
But, Joe, here I am getting on in the first year of my being bound. And since the day I started, I've never thanked her or asked after her. Or shall I remember her?
But even if you was out to knocking her up, say, a gross or two of shark-headed screws for general use, or some light fancy article, such as a toasting fork when she took her muffins, or a gridiron when she took a sprat or such like...
I don't mean any present at all, Joe.
Well, no, if I was yourself, Pip, I wouldn't. And the commonest workman can't show himself uncommon on a gridiron.
Joe, I never thought of making Miss Havisham any present. What I wanted to say was, as we're rather slack just now, if you would give me a half-holiday tomorrow, I could go uptown and make a call on Miss Havisham.
Her name ain't Estavisham, Pip, unless she'd been rechristened.
It's a slip, Joe. What do you think? Please, Joe.
You go. If she don't like it, you don't go again.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks.
No, Master. Sure you're not going to favour only one of us. If young Pip has a half holiday, do as much for old Arlick.
Pip's going uptown.
Well, two can go uptown. Ten only one, what can go uptown?
Hold your temper.
Shall lose it if I like. Summon their uptowning. No, Master, come. No favouring in this shop. Be a man.
When you're calm, we'll talk.
Joe kept a journeyman at weekly wages whose name was Orlick, a big fellow of great strength, always slouching. He lodged at the sluice keepers out on the marshes, and he hated me, always beating his sparks in my direction, thinking I was displacing him as apprentice.
You all right now?
I'm all right.
Then, as in general, you stick to your work as well as most men. Let it be a half holiday for all.
I heard that. Giving holiday to great idle hulks like that. You're a rich man upon my life to waste wages. I wish I was his master.
You'd be everybody's master if you durst.
I'd be a match for all Noodles and all Rogues, and I couldn't master Rogues without mastering you, you black...
You're a foul shrew, Mother Gargery. If that makes a judge of Rogues, you ought to be a good un.
What? What did you say? What did he call me, Pip, with my husband standing by? Oh, hold me!
I'd hold you if you was my wife. I'd hold you under the pump and choke it out of you.
What do you mean, Orlick, interfering between Mrs. Joe and me? You man enough to come on?
I am.
If any man in our neighbourhood could stand up long against Joe, I never saw him. And soon, Orlick, as if he had been of no more account than the pale young gentleman, was among the coat dust and in no hurry to come out of it.
Mind the door, Pet.
And he picked up my sister, who had dropped senseless near the window, and took her gently inside.
On the rampage, Pip, and off the rampage. Such is life. Run to the Jolly Bargeman. Tell him to send a pot of beer for Orlick and me.
Yes, Joe.
Well, I hope you want nothing. You'll get nothing.
No, Miss Havisham. I only wanted you to know that I'm doing very well in my apprenticeship, and I'm always much obliged to you.
Oh. Come now and then. Come on your birthday. Ah, you're looking round for Estella.
I hope she's well.
She's abroad, educating for a lady, far out of reach. She's prettier than ever, Pip, admired by all who see her. Do you feel that you've lost her? Or just lost your tongue? Go. Go. Go.
With the gate closed on me, I felt more than ever dissatisfied with my home and with my trade, with everything. Mr. Wopsle caught me staring at a bookshop, thinking what I would buy if I were a gentleman. There was nothing I could do but stay with him and listen to him declaiming from his new dramatic purchase until dark. When we set out together home beyond the town, we found a heavy mist had risen, wet and thick. The turnpike lamp was a blur.
Ole?
I was standing by a minute on the chance of company.
You're late.
Well, and you're late.
We have been indulging Mr. Orlick in an intellectual evening.
That's why I didn't see you. I must have been pretty close behind you in town.
The hulks!
Aye. Yeah. There's some of the birds flown from the cages. The guns have been going since dark about. Oh, there. Dear. A good night for cutting off in. With this wet, we'd be puzzled how to bring down a jailbird on the wing tonight.
There's something wrong in the trolley, bargeman. Wait here, both of you. It's up on the forge, Pip. Run. All run.
What is it?
Yeah, what?
I can't understand. The house seems to have been violently entered.
What?
When Joe went out.
Convicts.
When we got to our kitchen, the whole village was there, or in the yard. There was a surgeon, and there was Joe, and a group of women. They stood back when they saw me, and so I became aware of my sister, lying without sense or movement on the bare boards where she had been felled by a tremendous blow on the back of the head when her face was turned towards the fire, destined never to be on the rampage again.